America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
All right, everyone, we are back. Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. It's Dan Canobio, it's Chris Algieri, and we're ready to go here off of another weekend of boxing, Sunday night boxing on Zuffa. We will talk about that. We will get into the undercard coming up this weekend. Show the undercard some love of Ryan and Barrios. We will talk Ryan and Barrios later in the week. We've got to show love to this undercard because it's really good. And some more hijinks with the Virgil Ortiz and Jerome Boots and his fight, a temporary restraining order. I'm learning all these new legal terms. Being a boxing fan, you learn legal. But Chris, this episode is brought to you by PPV.com, as is every episode for the last like 2.5 years now. They're a proud presenting sponsor. It's how you watch big time fights. You can watch them on your TV, tablet, your big screen TV, your tablet, your phone. No subscriptions. No subscriptions. That's the best part. We're living in a subscription world. You're not locked down. You can roam free. You can order fight by fight. Just pop your email in, order the fight, watch the fight, talk to us in the live interactive chat, fight over, go about your life, do it again the following week or the next time you have a fight on PPV.com. That's the way to live, day by day. No one holding you down. PPV will never hold you down. It will enhance your life.
Liberty, freedom. It's American, baby.
PPV.com is America.
That's great.
Thank you, everybody.
Yes.
And if you don't use them, you're un-American. Sorry, I went too far. I went way too far.
You're becoming a politician very quickly.
Temporary restraining orders, America, the beautiful.
I mean, most politicians are lawyers, so it's you're tracking in the right direction.
I don't want to be any part of that. I just want to be a boxing lover.
The career arc of Dan Canobio. From
yes,
college dropout to
no, whoa. I have a degree. It's not on that wall.
I never even got it.
I didn't go to graduation. I graduated from New York Institute of Technology, which Chris, you also attended.
Yep.
I graduated from NYIT. My mom was like, "So when's the graduation?" I was like, "I'm not going. I don't care." I never even got the actual paper diploma, but I have a degree. Okay, so if anyone wants to go look for that,
with a broken hand, a broken thumb to my
that's pretty cool
NYIT master's graduation. So I got my whole outfit and I got my cast in there too.
Life of a fighter.
My mom came, my dad came, my grandparents came. It was a big deal. Master's degree.
I probably should have.
Yeah.
But
it's all right.
Whatever. I knew I'd be doing this, so I'll just be working sports, doing something. So
didn't need just a degree.
6 years. They call me Dan Wilder. That's what my brothers were calling me instead of Van Wilder.
that's clever.
Yeah, 7 years. They're like 7 years of college, and you have nothing. You have
nothing to show for it.
Bachelor's degree. What are you talking about?
Don't even have a physical copy of the degree.
Bachelor's degree.
Amazing.
Yeah. So let's get into it. Let's start with the Zuffa fight on Sunday night. Sunday night boxing. First of all, how do you feel about Sunday night boxing? I don't know if I like it.
I'm glad you opened with that because I do like it. But a suggestion, and Dana, I hope you're listening, move the fights earlier. It's Sunday. I don't want to be up at 10:30 at night on Sunday, 11 o'clock at night on Sunday watching fights. I don't stay up late on Sundays. And, you know, like last night, the fight ends. Me and you were talking. I was like, oh my God, I stayed up for this. Like it's a Sunday. Like I gotta work tomorrow. But I like Sunday sporting events. I think it's fun, but I think it should be earlier.
And that was a fast main card. Those are three quick knockouts. I think there was six total rounds. So that could have went much later into the night. I don't know. I just feel like I would have liked to have seen this card Saturday because there was no fight Saturday. But Sunday night, I think we're nitpicking here a little bit. We're going to nitpick a little bit about Zuffa the last couple of shows that they put on. I don't know. I'd rather a Wednesday Like, I loved when Pro Box, you guys were doing those Wednesday night fights. But I think it comes down to it.
Like, even like, what was it? Was it USA back in the day had?
Yeah, Tuesday night.
Wednesday. And then Friday, ESPN had Tuesday night fights. And there was Wednesday night fights, I think, on USA. Pro Box had Wednesday. Even like Thursday shows, like on the local scene, like in New York, there was always Thursday shows. They're not on TV, but like, I think other days besides Friday and Saturday are cool.
I like earlier in the week, but I think Zuf is doing some type of thing where they want to do Sundays because they don't want to go up against Saturday night, which is their own product, which is UFC or any other boxing event. And let's do it Sunday where everyone's still around. I don't know. I don't. Something about the Sunday, I have to get used to that.
Well, there was Daytona 500 yesterday. Did you watch that?
I heard Michael Jordan's car won.
His name is Tyler Reddick, I think. Reddick, yeah.
Then Jordan was grabbing some kid's butt.
What? Are we talking NBA style stuff?
Michael Jordan was grabbing some kid's butt on camera.
Oh no. Oh
yeah.
Oh,
anyway,
come on, MJ. Don't go that route like everybody else.
And everyone's coming to his defense on Twitter though, because it's hilarious. Everyone's like, "Oh, I guess you never had an uncle before."
that's a very unk move. Yeah. I don't know, but I was thinking about that. We were talking about other sporting events. Like, the Daytona 500 is a big deal. Like, I know it's not like a sport that you and I would watch, or many of us, but
big deal to you over there in Florida.
It's a big market share, and for people who are going to watch fights and are UFC fans and are boxing fans, I think, you know, going, it wasn't head to head because it was later, but you get sport fatigue. Like, I was like cheering during the Daytona finish because it was insane. There was so many accidents right before this guy comes out of nowhere and wins it. So it was like, it was very emphatic. So on a Sunday afternoon, you watch that and it's like, all right, I got to power down now. And now I got power back up for the fight. So yeah, I guess there is something to say about the Sunday shows not being ideal, but either way, I don't hate it. I just like it to be earlier.
So Efe Ajagba gets the win in the main event. He stops Charles Martin. Three rounds. He lost the first two rounds. Southpaw Martin was giving him issues. Southpaw Martin was looking like 2016 Prince Charles, in and out with that jab, scoring with the right hand and the left hook. Then Ajagba shows why he has a ferocious puncher. He's got the full Ajagba experience on Sunday night. Like, lost a few rounds, looks like Frankenstein in there, moves slow. Powerful, powerful puncher, erases Martin, and then the Zuffa hype train, which started before the fight, telling me that Efe Ajagba was an elite heavyweight. No, come on, we have odds. And then afterwards, telling me he's back. This is a statement win, like a statement win over freaking Charles Martin. My big problem with Zuffa is that. But let's talk about Ajagba. He looked solid, and he's a heavyweight signed to Zuffa, and he's definitely in the top 10.
Yeah, I like Ajagba. He is what he is, and you kind of said it perfectly. He's kind of Frankensteinish, a little bit slow starter, but God, is he powerful! He can punch with the right hand. He stalks you. He's also, I think, getting better. He's gotten better over the years. I've been watching him for a long time, from the top ranked shows, and he is progressing. It kind of looks like a guy who kind of took the sport on late, but is showing up now, which that's what you're supposed to do, but. Yeah, in terms of him being back, where was he? Was he coming back from? You know, he lost to Frank Sanchez. One of his best wins is which has aged well, is Guido Vianello, but very, very close fight. He just doesn't throw a lot of punches. He's not super exciting. He falls behind. And, I don't know. Saying he's a top elite heavyweight is a stretch.
Yeah, that's just what Zuffa's going to do. They signed him, so they're going to hype him up. You know, he looks the part. It's perfect for what their marketing machine is. Let's take a look at this big, powerful heavyweight. It's, climbs over the ropes.
Straight out of a video game.
Right, yeah. He's chiseled. But if you're a boxing fan, you know that there's been so much start and stop from this guy. There's been so much expectations that he has not filled, and I always hope every fighter fills their expectations, but don't try to sit here and tell me that he's an elite guy or he's the top of the chain, top of the food chain, and now after the fight when he knocks out Martin, we're talking about how he's back, statement win. Yeah, Max was on his BS last night. to say the least. Once again, he's going to say something on this on these shows that are going to anger. I actually think he's doing it to he's trolling us at this point because he Max called for a BMF belt, a BMF Zuffa belt. He actually shouted across. I think he was shouting across to Dana. Hey, Dana, can we get a Zuffa belt, a BMF belt? And I'm just like, this is supposed to be the organization that's coming in to eliminate belts. And now we're adding a fictionary BMF, baddest fictionary
is a word. I think fictional.
Fictionary should be a word. That's a word.
It is today. It is now.
The fictionary Zuffa
fictitious
BMF belt, fictitious BMF belt, which is a made up belt. So we're adding made up belts to an organization that is here to eliminate the belts. And then he also compared a prospect's jab to Larry Holmes.
Oh boy, I didn't hear that one. That would have sent me to a tizzy.
But he said, like, he caught himself. He's because Andre is like, you know, everyone kind of takes you at your word for these with these comparisons. And then Max was like, listen, guys, when I make these comparisons, I don't mean literally. Like, it reminds me. He kept saying, and that's when Andre was like, you know, like everyone is like taking you at your word. So if you compare Callum Walsh to Roy Jones, like you're Max Kellerman, like it's going to make noise.
Yeah. I mean, and part of that, he knows that. And part of that is why he says it that way, because he is Max Kellerman and he's a legendary broadcaster in this sport. And, you know, it's a high honor for the fighters themselves. Callum Walsh was, you know, yeah, this is cool. But yeah, people listening are just going to be like, it's going to be off putting if you try and get guys like that, you know, to the current crop of guys and not even the top guys in our sport.
So Jogba gets the win. He looked solid. You know, I didn't really learn much about him. He was supposed to take out Martin, had no chin. He had zero punch resistance. He looked good for 6 minutes and fell off a cliff. I don't know where I put a Jogba, but he's one of the bigger names signed to Zuffa. And according to Mike Coppinger, they're about to sign three big name American heavyweights, Zuffa, one of which is a former champion. I think that's Andy Ruiz. I saw a video of him on like TikTok. He was slimmed down. He's in the gym. So they're going to sign heavyweights, and they're going to have a little round robin. And I would not be shocked if we see a Zuffa heavyweight championship fight, just like we're seeing a light heavyweight championship fight. So Efe Ajagba, you're in the mix, man. You're a Zuffa heavyweight.
Well, cruiserweight, we're going to see. You said light heavyweight, but...
Sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But yeah, no, heavyweights, I mean, listen, heavyweights are fun. And everyone likes heavyweights. We like the big guys. And anything that gets the heavyweight division moving, I'm all for. So if they're going to sign heavyweights and have these guys fight each other, great. I think Ajagba, again, what you said is absolutely correct. We didn't learn anything from this fight. I think we learned more from the draw with Bacoli than we learned against, you know, Frank Martin last night. Frank Martin, 41 years old, been on coming off the couch, essentially. You know, he's had one win in the last 3 years.
He's 39. I don't want to age the man.
Oh, 39. Again, like you said, still, he looked good for the first two rounds. The athleticism was there. He's still a big heavyweight, but when it came back to any kind of pushback, any kind of resistance, he fell apart, which is to be expected when you haven't been in the ring in a long time. You fight a guy like Ajagba. Ajagba is a big, tough, solid guy, but I want to see him with other guys, like maybe a rematch of Frank Sanchez. See if he's, you know, progressed that much more and he can get that.
He turned that down.
Loss back. It's not a good sign.
I believe He turned down, it was an IBF eliminator, and he said the money wasn't there. So I guess Zuffa showed FA more money.
They probably had this deal in play already. That you know, depending on how long they were talking before that. But again, I don't know, dude. If you're a fighter and you have one loss on your record and you have an opportunity to fight for an IBF and to get that back potentially, it would be hard for me to say no to that as a fighter.
Right, and now it's going to be Sanchez and our guy Richard Torres fighting for the IBF eliminator. For the right to fight Moses Atalma.
I was speaking about Richard Torres and Atalma recently. And I like the way Richard's moving. He's a real American heavyweight. He's undefeated. He's a very likable, affable kid. He can fight a little bit too. I was really impressed when he fought Guido Vianello. I would like to see him with Atalma. I think that fight makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so that's the heavyweight division, what's going on around there. But in the Zuffa world, they're going to sign three heavyweights.
We don't know who they are. You're just assuming Andy and.
Oh, they didn't. They really teased it at the end of the fight, and then on the post fight show, Molly Karam said Coppinger said they're going to sign three big name American heavyweights. One's a former champion. So who's an American, a former American heavyweight champion that's still fighting or is Andy. Somewhat active? Good Andy point. Ruiz.
Yep.
Deontay Wilder. That's really it. I mean, who else are they going to bring out?
Andy would be a smart move. You're getting access to the Mexican market. They obviously have a lot of Mexican fighters Andy Ruiz. On the undercard. Yeah, almost definitely. Because he's a guy who's not been active. And we saw him on the first Riyadh card. You know, so he's a guy who's been able to jump on these big opportunities. You know, I think he had a draw with Jarrell Miller.
F.A. Jagba versus Andy Ruiz for the Zuffa Heavyweight Championship of the World.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Former champion and Andy doesn't. Ruiz. You got a Jagba who they are really pushing as the next big thing. Yeah.
Stop with the. That's what my problem with my one criticism of Zuffa. I have a couple criticisms, but
your one.
I have a few. The constant, the pushing of the narratives. Like we're boxing. Like the people that are tuned in last night on Paramount Plus at 9 p.m. on a Sunday are boxing hardcores. Mm-hmm. You're not talking to casuals. You're not hooking them in. You don't have to sit here and tell me that F.A. Jagba is the next big thing because you're talking to hardcore fans. You're talking to fans that have watched F.A. Jagba fight for the last 5 years. So you know what he is, and you know what Charles Martin is. So you're not fooling them. You can't fool boxing fans. I've said that for a very long time.
Yes, for sure. And it, like I said before, it can be off-putting for hardcores. But if there are new fans and you start, you know, get that narrative going early and you keep pounding it home,
lie.
We were talking about politicians earlier. You know,
if you get them early, you can lie to politics. Them.
Yeah, if you can indoctrinate the masses from the beginning and just keep going, then you'll have some little eight-year-old kid turns
on Paramount Plus and he's brainwashed into believing the F.A. Jagba was the heavyweight champion of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly.
Okay, great. Lovely. Love that. Yeah. So we're three. Oh, wait, we got to get to the other fights. Jabril Pey Benito with the upset win. Fun fight. Two knockdowns. He was the underdog. I think he was a plus 350 dog, or even more probably.
Which is weird. They're both undefeated, and they're you know 10-0 versus 6-0. You know what insider trading was going on? They knew that this guy was you know supposed to be this killer, and then he gets dropped twice. And did he get stopped? Was it a stoppage?
Pey Benito won a stoppage. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a stoppage. Okay.
Yeah, Kriegel picked it correctly, and I think Coppinger picked it correctly. Yeah. But Benito gets the win. That was a nice fight on the opener. And then Umar Zambekov, light heavyweight from Austria.
Oof.
One punch, potential knockout of the year, uppercut from the gods, clean. Break that down for us, Chris, because that was beautiful.
Blistering shot. Southpaw position. That beautiful slip outside splits the guard. You don't see it. That lead uppercut's it's a great punch from either stance, but from the southpaw stance, it's really difficult to see because what happens is that lead hand, you actually blind yourself with your lead hand. Your hand is up, the punch, the guy puts his head on the outside, you blind yourself with your own glove, and that punch comes up and under the guard. And a lot of times those shots that come up and under that way, you can't see, especially because you're blinding yourself, and that's why you get the reaction you got. What was his name?
Ali Abba.
That was one of those. He goes down, eyes are open, the lights are on, but nobody's home. He was out on his flat on his back. Beautiful shot. Just didn't see it coming. He was coming forward. And I say this all the time. Don't have your head over your skis. And you could see he was just so heavy over that front foot. Just asking to get hit with that uppercut.
That was insane. That's could be knockout of the year. So Zuffa might have knockout of the year. So far, I mean, it's February. I definitely think it's the leader. And that's what Zuffa needs. Like you, yeah, quick show last night, kind of. But you had three knockouts, and knockouts sell. Put them on social media. It creates buzz. It allows people to say, "Oh wow, Zuffa's what's going on over on Zuffa? Big knockouts? Woo! I'll tune in." Mm-hmm. So that's a big time moment that they had there. And Zambekov is a shout out to our loyal listener Sean Sweeney, associate head coach of the San Antonio Spurs,
nice.
A friend of ours. No big deal. He texted me on Friday and said, "I can't wait to watch Umar fight because I've watched him spar. And he's the real deal." And I said, "Oh, wow. Okay. I will be seated for that fight. I was going to watch anyway, but I'll be even more seated for that fight." And then Umar comes in and steals the show. Light heavyweight, 14-0 with 10 stoppages. Was asked afterwards by Max Kellerman, "Do you think you're ready for the biggest names?" You know, he wasn't about to talk trash, but he's on the doorstep. They might put him in there with Hot Rod, which would be a nice little, you know, a step up. That's what another beauty. It's not all criticism of Zuffa, is you can build something here. Like fans who tuned in 2 weeks ago watched Hot Rod with an upset win. So then you put him in there with this guy coming off of this knockout. Then you have something to build towards. You have, it's easy for fans to follow along. I will give them that. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's continuity. It's continuity in the events.
Yes.
The events are back to back to back. They're stacking them very, very smartly. They're keeping us tuned in, and like you said, like you're able to bridge each show to each other. Like, oh, we just saw two guys in the same weight class have really good knockout wins. Why don't we just, it just makes sense. We'll make them fight. And when you have a very small talent pool the way Zuffa does so far, like right now, yeah, you're swimming in a small pond. You're going to find each other. So these two kind of guys fighting each other, that's a good fight, man. I was looking. I didn't know a whole lot about this Umar Zabikov, but he. I went looking into his record a little bit, and he has been in with some pretty tough cats already. He is legit. Just like our boy said, you know, I think it was, yeah, just his his 11th or 12th pro fight. He fought Romero Alexis Angulo. He's the one that Edgar Berlanga infamously bit on the shoulder. Guy is solid, super, super tough. Only ever been stopped by David Benavidez. To fight that kind of guy that early in your career, that shows you that the people around you really believe in you to put you in like that. And then even last night, he was fighting a guy with 24-1 whose only loss was Jean Pascal. So that's a pretty big step up fight for a 14-0 or 13-0 guy. And to dispatch him the way that he did, yes, Umar is the real deal.
Big time. So it was a good card. Definitely one of their best in terms of knockout wins. I think fans want that. You know, I still think the second Zuffa event was their best one. I think they had more competitive matches.
For sure.
The Hot Rod fight, the Butiev versus Boichuk.
War. Bigger names, fights. Too. Those are big names.
Bigger names. This is like going to get the attention of casual boxing fans, and they get the attention of maybe casual fans if they put this on the UFC account, posted the knockout, stuff like that. That this is what you need. You need that type of viral moment. Mm-hmm. Not that it was like super viral, but that was a big knockout. And the reaction when he was on his, when he looked up and like couldn't move, like he was like paralyzed temporarily. That's upsells.
Ourselves. And I think you got to, when it comes to the evaluation of Zuffa, I don't think people are going to evaluate them show by show. I think you're evaluating the experience. They've had three cards in 1 month. So they're all blending together. Like, again, that word continuity is going to come back in here because you're going to evaluate the whole system so far. And because we've gotten three different, very different shows in the last month in terms of name recognition, knockouts, entertainment value, all of it has come together in these three shows. We got some mega knockouts, we got some heavyweights, we got some names, we got some wars, we got some mismatches, we got some duds. You know, they've really come across the whole gamut of boxing in this short three fight, 1 month span. And they're just learning. It's like AI collecting data. You're seeing that they're going to make adjustments. They're getting a bigger stable. They're, you know, pushing this narrative. They're pushing the talking points over and over and over again. Dude, it's a machine. It's a machine, and it's rolling
certainly
on.
Is. I would give Zuffa Boxing a B- so far through three events. They've been some solid fights given the fighter pool that they have to choose from. Some good exciting fights, like the Hot Rod fight and the Butiev fight in Boichuk, and some exciting knockouts, like we saw on Zuffa 3. The production has been very solid. We knew that going in. It's been consistent. They've had three shows in a month. What other promotion is doing that right now? The bad is Max Kellerman. I actually think he's hurting the product with the overall shilling of the product, and that goes to a bigger problem where they're just beating you over the head with what Zuffa is, what we're about, what we're going to do, what we're going to this, that, and the other. It's just too much of that. Fighting in the empty apex is a problem. It was dead silent in there on Zuffa Boxing 3. They have to get out of there or add more fans to them. And then finally, the uniforms, something that we've talked about at length on this show. I can't stand them. It's part of the bland corporate approach that we're seeing from Zuffa. They're making a colorful sport feel black and white. But overall, three weeks in, a month in, B-, solid. Good, not great.
Dan, that's fair. And I think, honestly, if Dana was honest about his own assessment and evaluation, he would probably be around about the same. B minus B, because you could tell how unhappy he was the first show. You know, he was glowing last night after the third show, but I think that was a little bit of putting on airs as well. But yeah, I think he sees exactly what I was saying before, that we're getting a little bit of everything. They're taking in the response, and they're making adjustments on the fly. And that he knows is a process. He said it in that first interview. I thought he's like, look at us at the end of the year. Don't look at us now. And that's the ultimate goal. And I think that's really smart and savvy to look at it. Like, I remember I've said this before, but my in high school, my best friend's dad was like a former wrestler and like a wrestling coach guy. And he always says, Chris, doesn't matter how your season starts. It matters how it ends. And that's the methodology that I think Zuffa and Dana are taking. And so far, so good. Like you said, it's coming out the gates with a B minus. Not bad. Not bad at all.
Yeah, given that, like, you know, they're pretty much using a very small roster to choose from. They're getting fighters that were coming off of contracts or at the end of contracts, using a lot of 360 fighters, Tom Loeffler. They're signing some big names. They're using some shrewd matchmaking. They're taking some names that we've heard of, name recognition. The broadcast they picked out, it's a solid team. I mean, Joe Tess, Max, and Andre Ward calling these fights is pretty impressive, with Molly Karam and Kriegel. And you knew that was going to be the case. You knew the production was going to be really good. And then most of all, like, you have a freaking TV home. Like, Top Rank still doesn't have a TV home. TPC is only putting on pay-per-views. Matchroom has DAZN, and we know the issues with DAZN if you're a boxing fan. So that's the main thing. And I think that gives them, like, footing. That gives them ground, is that they have a home to put these fights. And they're supposedly getting a lot of money from Paramount, if you believe some of the reports that are out there. But, yeah, Dana was feeling himself after the fight on Saturday night. He came in barrel.
Guns blazing.
Barrel-chested, guns blazing. Like, I can't believe that I'm sitting here now watching Dana White press conferences, because he does these at the UFC. Like, after a big UFC event, he goes to the press conference and he gives, like, a State of the Union, and everyone waits on bated breath for literally everything he's going to say, because it's one guy running a company. And even though that he doesn't even really run the company, if you follow some of these court rulings over the last couple of weeks, he doesn't even do anything anymore. But he's still up there as the figurehead. And now we're getting into boxing. So I'm sitting there watching the press conference last night, and you have to wait. I want to hear what he has to say. And one of the reporters asks, what has been the pushback from the boxing establishment, the Oscars, the Eddie Hearns, the Frank Warrens, the MVPs of the world? He goes, there hasn't been any pushback. This is like beating up babies. I feel like I came in and I'm beating up babies. I expected more. I expected pushback. I expected some pain. They're all way out of their league, absolutely positively out of their league. I'm actually shocked.
All right, first of all, the beating up babies reference, not sure where that's from. I've never heard that used before. It's like beating up babies. Anyway, but I don't know, what did he expect? He expect like an all-out war? It's another promotion. That's how these promoters are going to look at it. They're all doing their own business. They're going to go out there and put on their own shows. And boxing's had a great start to the year. January was a fantastic month with a lot of good fights. I don't know what he expected there to be, or if that really is what he expected, or is just to saying this as a talking point. You know, it was kind of a weird question to begin with. Like, you know, what's the pushback been? What do you mean?
You got to watch these press conferences. They're like, they got guys in there that are like,
yeah, plants.
Plant. Like, the first four questions were so, like, just softballs and, like,
yeah. It's a plant to get a specific talking point. And that was one of those.
Yeah. They're not going to offer much pushback in these things. That's another issue here, but yeah, he also talked about Mauricio Sulaiman. The Sulaiman guy is incredible. He's the greatest PR guy for how effed up boxing is. He's incredible. The guy should keep doing interviews every day, keep talking. It's incredible. I love it.
That was spot on. Dan is 100% right on that one. Mauricio has been doing this media tour to try and save face and correct some wrongs.
Shoot himself in the foot every time.
Yeah. There's a reason that the governing bodies generally usually stay quiet and stay out of the people don't know the rules. People don't know what's going on. You know, because when you look under the microscope, things tend to get a little squirrely. And the timing of all of this, when you have a new organization who's coming in who wants to end all belts, not the time to be, you know, making these broad stroke movements that are exposing a lot of weird things that happen in this sport. So, yeah, that point by Dana is spot on.
Yeah, because Mauricio's doing the came on with you guys and you asked him about, you know, where did you come up with the 120? And he had no answer. He went on Mannix's show and Mannix said, you got Pacquiao fighting for a world title. You got Ryan Garcia fighting for a world title coming off a loss. Who's never fought at 147. You got Conor Benn at number one. He had no answers. He just said, those are all very talented fighters, he basically said. There was no reasoning. Like, there's no reasoning for the 120,000 for Shakur. I understand that it's a rule. Like, okay, but why? Why is it a rule? Like, that's the problem with Mauricio. Not to get into a whole Mauricio thing.
No, but real quick, though, because there was an interesting point. It was by Samson Lekowitz, who's brilliant, very, really, really, really smart manager and finder of talent from South America. He came on, he kind of stepped in and spoke for Mauricio when it came to what that sanctioning fee was in regards to Shakur moving up a weight class and not defending that title. He called it insurance policy. So for example, if Shakur went up to lose, if he would have just paid that fee, and it's $120,000 a lot of money.
That's it's a lot.
It's not 3%, obviously, you know, apparently, because apparently you made somewhere in the $4-5 to $10 million mark. So it certainly wasn't 3%, but also it also seemed like it's a negotiable fee. So a lot of it is communication. That's what essentially what we came down to figuring out. But Lekowitz made a really good point that I said, you know, it's a bit of an insurance policy. So if you are to leave the weight class and lose up at that belt, he's like, even if you get knocked out, you can come back and you're world champion. Ship is still there. And I think
but
a lot of
it still
I think
be there.
What's that?
Shouldn't it still be there no matter what, the money or not?
It should, but also, you know, their argument is that it's a business and yeah, there is operating costs, which is what I wanted to ask Mauricio as well.
Paulie did say that, though.
Yeah. What are the operating costs? Like, what is the overhead of a business?
Open
like
those
the
books.
WBC? Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, and they say a big part of the money goes to the funds that are supposed to help fighters in retirement. If that's true, that's amazing. And if that's the case, if that's what governing bodies truly were doing with the money, that would be phenomenal. But it's until, like you said, open up the books, show us that's where the money is headed. And I think you'll get a lot less pushback. And that's where I think Mauricio was trying to go with doing this media round tour, is trying to be like, oh, I'm trying to explain all these things and kick his case out there in a certain way and let people see these things. But if you're not coming with facts and numbers and books,
right,
it's just one man's word against everyone else who's paying attention from the outside.
No, I 100% agree. He has to. I've heard this before because it's not the first time that he's been like, how this, you know, questioned Mauricio. He just loves talking. He loves being in front of the camera. So
I think we're seeing the egos play a big role in everyone in this sport. All the promoters, yeah, from guys, you know, again, Dana White going up there and speaking and holding court after every show. Like, every promoter does that. Bob Arum did that. Eddie Hearn does that. You know, Eddie Hearn has been the first new age promoter in boxing to constantly be in front of the camera on social media. Yeah. Super strong social media presence. I remember when he first came out, he had more social media followers than all of his fighters. And yeah, that's the first time in boxing. Yeah, still does. That's the first time in boxing that's been where Dana has been that guy in UFC the whole time. He's always been that figurehead. Like you said, they did peel back the court documents that Dana doesn't really do a whole lot for the UFC, but he is the figurehead of the.
Yeah, you look at him and you think of a fight. When I look at Dana White, I think of fighting. I think of a fight. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're trying to do with Zuffa now, too, is make it more about the overall sport rather than the individuals, which is a big issue.
The brand.
I think the brand over the fighters. That's why you're seeing like the uniforms that Chris loves the uniforms, guys. He's texting me all night. Dan, how do I get my hands on these trunks? How do I get my hands on these ropes, these Zuffa ropes? Chris is going crazy.
Apparently, you go to Walmart. The quality of this gear. Come on, guys. You have a lot of money. At least make them look good. Like they don't look good. They sit on the body weird. They don't move the way that normal trunks do. They look like board shorts. I said it to you last night a couple times. I'm like, why are they wearing board shorts? This is boxing. They don't look comfortable. They don't look fluid. They don't look athletic. They don't look good. It's flat. It's so flat on air, on TV.
Yeah, you got a white trunks, black trunks, white ring, white or black gloves, like gray. It's just bland. That's what I was talking about with the. You're taking the color away from a very. This is the most colorful sport. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a worldwide sport. There's characters. It's supposed to be pageantry. They're dumbing it down with these uniforms, and I understand
not dumbing it down, but watering it down. Yeah,
both.
You're watering out. You're diluting the color.
Absolutely. And there goes Dan and Chris talking about the uniforms again, but it's about a bigger picture. It's about the corporation. They're looking for a sponsor to come in, sponsor the fight kits, and that's what you're forced to do because this is a league. We wear uniforms in this league. You can't wear your tassels. You can't wear your trunks. You can't have a crazy walkout. I hope the walkouts remain because I think we'll still get those, but I hope they get out of the Apex too. I have people telling me it's an amazing experience. For who? Like, it's so expensive. They're going to add 1,100 by the end of the year, which should be a big time improvement. I think there's like last night was probably their lowest attended event because it was Valentine's Day weekend, Sunday night, not the biggest card. It was dead silent in there. It sounded like COVID level.
And I said this in the very beginning with the Apex. I think it's a good idea because it's just low overhead. They're coming in quietly. They're it's the boiling water and the frog. They're coming in slow. They're not spending too much money now. They're taking their time. They're being very businesslike, very systematic. And I think that's part of it. I think part of it is that the Apex is not a big overhead. They're not blowing the budget early like a lot of people do when they come into boxing for the very first time. These guys come in guns blazing and spending way over for production costs. I think this is being they're being smart and conscientious of the output early on until they get this thing really figured out. And once everything's dialed in, like, and we're seeing it improving already, they're willing to make adjustments and concessions, obviously. That's how I think we're going to step out. We're going to see bigger shows, bigger venues, stepping outside of the Apex. They're trying to figure it out on safe ground at this point. If you have your own built-in venue to try all this out before you branch out. Dude, venues lose, I mean, you lose money producing fights. I have been on all sides of it. You have too. You know, your brother works in the industry. Putting on fight cards, being a promoter, big out of pocket expenditure. You're losing money on shows. If you have a built-in home, why not use it? Especially in the beginning.
Yeah, no,
and
for sure.
Like you said, they have a TV arm, they have a network, a big one. So it doesn't make sense to go anywhere else.
I know. Yeah, I would say Dana's right about judges at the end of the year because B minus is a pretty solid grade for me.
Yeah,
given all that,
you didn't get B minus your first year in college.
I actually did. I started strong. I was like Charles Martin. I started strong and then I faded.
Yeah,
and got knocked out.
Out of the
but
gate,
I got back
and then
up.
Just completely flatlined.
I had like a 3.5 my first semester at West Virginia.
Whoa.
Yeah, I just stopped going to class. You can't do good if you don't show up.
That's
all you got to do is show up.
I think that's a saying. I think it's a Nike t-shirt, actually. It's a Nike
You can't
saying.
Do good if you don't show up. Anyone in college or any high school
write that one down, guys.
You can't do good if you don't show up. Anyone in college right now listening or watching or in high school getting ready to go to college, all you got to do is just go. If you go, you will get a 3.0 because it's really easy college if you just apply yourself the tiniest bit. The hardest part is getting to class.
Oh, Dan, this is – you're amazing. We got to bring up your scholastic record every show, I think, because
– Let's not. It's something, man. It's something. Maybe that could be a whole nother episode. All in all, Zuffa, solid. Solid, solid, solid. I put out a tweet on what are your thoughts on Zuffa so far? It's got 100 as of right now. We have 125 responses. I would say most are in that B, C range. You know, a lot of positive remarks, a lot of positive reviews, a lot of willing to see where it goes. I'm intrigued. Some good fights so far. The knockouts are fun. And I'm overwhelmingly... That the criticisms are the same things that we're saying is like the max and the over the top selling of it is just too much. We don't need to be hit over the head with that. So we'll see. March 8th is their next event, which is Jai Opetaia versus Brandon Clanton's for the first ever Zuffa cruiserweight belt. We'll see how that all plays out. Is IBF going to be acknowledged on the air, the ring belt and all that? So that's interesting. We're going to keep an eye on it as always. Let's move on to something I want to talk about, Chris. The undercard this weekend of Ryan Garcia and Mario Barrios. I feel like the undercard is not getting any love at all. It's a really strong undercard. We are going to do an episode at the end of the week previewing the main event. So I didn't want these fights to get swallowed up because there's also a couple other main events this weekend. Richardson Hitchens versus Oscar Duarte, co-main event. This is a banger. This is a really good fight. Hitchens coming off that win over Kambosos. Duarte, 4-fight win streak since the Ryan Garcia loss. Like, this is like a really good fight.
it's a really good fight in terms of matchup stylistically, and both guys, it's a deserved fight too. Duarte has been on a tear since the Ryan Garcia fight. He hooked up Robert Garcia and has been beating good fighter after good fighter after good fighter. Meritocracy is not dead. He has earned this position. He's stepping into a legitimate title fight and deserves to be there. So there's that. Hitchens hasn't been as active as I'd like to see the champions, but still been talking a big game. Very, very talented guy. So it's a good fight, man. You got the long jabbing boxer, you know, with great endurance, and he's big for the weight class. You got Duarte, who's a killer puncher. Very durable. He's a very Terminator like chop you down kind of guy. Good matchup for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I want to see if Duarte can get inside. Hitchens, I think, has top five best jab.
Yeah, if he can get past that jab, it's a fight.
Hitchens, I would say, has top five best jab in boxing. I'm going to get ridiculed for that. Would you say that right away?
He has an elite jab. There's no question. No question.
It's definitely top of the food chain.
Yeah. Yeah. He has an elite jab, an elite boxer style. He's a bit of a pure boxer. He's not a power puncher. He doesn't let the right hand go a whole lot. You rarely see throw left hooks unless you're fighting Kambosos, who can't, you know, defend anything. So he is a jab machine. He's got a very, very disciplined jab. He does not mind using it all night long. He will stand behind that jab for 12 rounds and pepper you and cut you up and bust you up. And he has no problem doing that. He knows exactly what he is. And I think that's really smart and a big part of his game.
I like that he stopped Kambosos. I mean, yeah. I made some money on that fight because everyone's like, there's no way he's going to stop Kambosos. He's too tough. Hitchens doesn't let those power shots go. But, you know, that was back in June. So it's been a while since he's been in the ring. Hitchens, really good fighter, talks a lot. I mean, I feel like he's calling someone out, a different person every day. And I hope he's not getting too ahead of himself here because Duarte can bang. Duarte is really good. And I want to see if he can get in the inside. I don't think this is going to look like Shakur and Teofimo.
No.
Because Duarte, I think, is a way different fighter than Teofimo. Because I'm looking at that comparison because of the boxing of Hitchens and the superior jab. And this is a boxer versus a puncher, even though Teofimo was never not 100% a puncher. He was more of a counter puncher. But Duarte is going to take more chances than Teofimo. He's going to find ways to get inside. Hitchens isn't as good as Shakur. So I think there'll be more excitement in this fight in terms of, like, if you're looking at this Hitchens-Duarte fight, it's, oh, there's no way Duarte's going to get close to Hitchens. It's going to be a jab fest for 12 rounds. Hitchens going to get his hand raised. I actually think Duarte will be able to get in and score. Do you agree?
I do agree. And the comparison, maybe like you mentioned, the Teo and Shakur, it could be apt from the outside looking in. But if you know these guys, you know that they're very different fighters. Like Duarte and Teofimo are not similar at all. Duarte is a tank. He's going to come forward. He doesn't mind.
You know what I mean? Like that. That's like hit. If you look at it
but on paper, people look at it like that. Like, yeah, no, it's a very similar fight. You got a boxer puncher and you got a puncher and you got a boxer, pure boxer. I think Shakur is much more of a pure boxer and defensively sound and can disarm you even while standing in front of you much more so than Hitchens. The level of IQ is just on a different. And just their ability, they're stylistically very different. Hitchens has to work harder than Shakur to maintain distance and keep a guy on the outside. He's got to be pumping that jab. Where Shakur can literally he uses feints and movement and making you miss and feel uncomfortable. It's really impressive how little he needs to do to completely disarm a guy. Where Hitchens is going to have to beam pull you with that jab all night long and just strafe you with shots. And you got a guy like Duarte who I think he's not like Teo. When you catch Teo, it makes him think a little bit and he stays on the outside. He doesn't want to get hit. Duarte's not like that. Yeah. He's going to walk through the shot.
Yeah,
he's like, oh, you're going to hit me with five jabs? Cool. I'm going to get inside and now I'm going to punch you in the liver. And I'm okay with that. I don't see him getting discouraged. You know, he didn't against Ryan. Ryan, he was a bigger guy throwing big punches. He was pushing Ryan all night long until he got clipped.
Yeah, I like this fight a lot. It's the co-main event. Hitchens wins. I don't know where he goes. Does he stay at 140? Does he go to 147? He'll call everyone out. Under the sun. Gary Antoine Russell returns. He hasn't fought in almost a year. He hasn't fought in a year, which is the Russell way. But I thought that he would be more active. I understand this fight versus Hiroka was supposed to land on the Jake Paul Gervonta Davis card. That's how snake bitten this fight has been. So Russell was supposed to get in there at the end of last year. I'll give him that. But the fight gets moved back all the way to February because of the politics of the sport. Very good fighter, Gary Antoine Russell. Underrated at 140. I go back to that Venezuela fight where he threw average 85 punches per round and beat up Jose Valenzuela. Like, we've never seen him beat up before. And Hiroka, I'm seeing as the sexy pick, Chris. Everyone's like, oh, you don't sleep on really? Andy Hiroka. Stop Barroso. Stop the old man, Ismael Barroso. I just think Russell's on another level. He's a minus 350 favorite.
First off, that fight with Ryo and Russell, we were there for that fight. He looked like he was redlining it from round one. And I was like, there's no way this kid keeps this up. And sure as hell, he did. 12 damn rounds at such a high clip. And you said he threw 75 punches. He was throwing bombs, too, throughout. Really impressive, his output, his endurance, his ability to ride the needle that way all night long, to push the red line all night long. But yeah, that was a super impressive win. And Ryo's a tough guy who can punch. So being able to beat him in that way, very impressive. Andy Hiroka can fight, dude. He's another one, though, plagued by inactivity. We got two very inactive guys fighting each other. I think Gary Antoine Russell has been in with the better opposition, you know, over the years, even though he's been supremely, ridiculously inactive, fighting once a year for the last number of years. But you said, like you said, very, very Russell-type fashion, not being active. But Andy Hiroka can fight, dude. This is an interesting matchup. I think you're going to see Russell want to close the distance again on the inside. Hiroka is long. Nice fights jam. Well from the mid distance, sets up his power shots, sets traps really, really well. If he can maintain that mid to outside distance, Andy Hiroka has a lot of things that can really hurt Russell. But if Russell gets on the inside, I just think his ability to let those hands go in combination the way that he does and continuously keep that up, I don't think Andy's ever dealt with someone like that. So very good fight. Another excellent matchup for a number of reasons and for a legitimate world title at welterweight, junior welterweight or light welterweight. Another important fight at 140.
Another fight at 140 on this card is Frank the Ghost Martin is back.
Streaking comeback kid.
Yeah, he came off of that big knockout of Aransas Bartholomew. I was on the December card. He's getting right back in there. They're pushing him 3 months. Good for that. That's good. Good. That's only fought four rounds. Didn't get marked up too bad against Bartholomew. Frank is back against Nahir Albright. Nahir Albright is 17-2, 30-year-old. Most famously fought Keyshawn Davis really tough in 2023. Fight was changed to a majority decision win to a no decision. I believe that was because Keyshawn tested positive for smoking the weed. But in that fight, it was 95-95 on one of the judges' scorecards, 96-94 on the other against Keyshawn. And then he beats Keyshawn's brother. He lost to Jermaine Ortiz in a close fight or close-ish fight. It's be a pretty good test for Frank because I better test than Bartholomew.
I think this is more than a test. I think this is a really tough fight for Frank. Nahir Albright can fight. And he's one of those guys, like us local New York guys are aware of him, you know, from Philly, trains out of Jersey, has fought a lot on New York shows, local shows, has been in super tough his entire career. And his losses are few and they're against very, very, you know, top level guys, has fought a lot of tough outs, has been the B side quite a bit and often scores upsets or at least overperforms like he did against Keyshawn. So yeah, this is a very real fight for Frank. Frank hasn't been in the deep waters at 140. And even though he's not a name, I think Nahir is good enough that he would be considered deep waters.
Plus 275 favorite Nahir Albright. So there's your undercard for Friday or Saturday's fights. Brian Garcia, Mario Barrios. We have an extensive coverage of that fight, a preview podcast. I'm going to go live Saturday night, post-fight show. Ryan Garcia fight week is about to ramp up. I don't know how I feel about that fight, Ryan and Mario. I have not really hunkered down. I will spend the rest of the week thinking, pacing.
Thinking
and pacing.
Thinking cat.
Yeah, because like – conventional wisdom's like, all right, Ryan's going to win. He's just got more God-given skills. Then you peel back into the intangibles, the mental aspect, the how Ryan has looked the last couple of fights, how Mario's looked the last couple of fights. Does Mario have that dog in him? He's not old. He's 30-something years old. He, early 30s. Like, this guy's getting constantly disrespected, Mario Barros.
Yeah. By quite a few people in the sport. I think it's, I mean, some of it's warranted. Some of it, I think, is a little over the top. You know, he's solid. He hasn't had a great run of form as of recently. You know, he's
30 years old.
Yeah, he's so young. It's crazy. He's been around forever.
He's only 3 years older than Ryan Garcia.
He looks and seems and acts like he's 10 years older than. Yeah. Very mature guy. But listen, I think I feel like he's probably a little embarrassed by the Pacquiao fight. Guy comes off the couch for, you know, 4.5 years, 47 years old, and then drives you to a draw, you know, in front of everybody in the biggest stage possible. I think he has a lot to prove. And I don't think you don't want to lose to Ryan. If you're a hardcore Mexican warrior, like Barrios sees himself, you don't want to lose to a guy like Ryan Garcia. So I think he's going to go the extra mile to make sure that he's, and you see it, you know, he's got a new coach. He's with Joe Goosen now, who used to train Ryan. I think that's an important factor in this, so at least if not physically, so psychologically, or I should say, if not tactically, so psychologically, I think it's even more important than the tactical aspect of it. And then Ryan's just a freaking wild card, dude. You don't know what's going to show up. He can be a world beater or he can be a complete dud. You know, against Devin, he looked like he was a comet that was going to flare out, and then he goes out there and fights like a dog for 12 rounds and looked really impressive. Then you get the Rollies fight, which on paper, we're looking at this like it's a walkover, and then just doesn't show up, gets dropped to the left hook early. Horrible. And just throws no punches all night long and loses.
That's so weird. That fight was so weird. I mean, I don't know how to gauge Ryan off of that fight. Cause that's,
how do you gauge him off any fight? It's just, up and down.
Both of them. Like Mario Barrios, like he looked good against Ugas, then falls off a cliff at 30. He's fighting to a draw, getting dropped by Ramos. He's losing to Pacquiao or not putting his foot down at Pacquiao. Pacquiao's wife says, yes, you can come out of retirement because this guy's not good. I mean, that's just the most disrespectful thing I've heard in a long time in this sport. And then you just don't know what you're going to get. Ryan in the best shape, I would give him that. The guy is definitely takes this camp serious. As serious as Ryan could.
What is that?
Exactly. That's what you said. As serious as Ryan could, because a lot of the footage has been coming out in living rooms, sparring streamers. He's got his dad as his lead trainer, Henry Garcia, who guided him pretty much his whole life, but he's not a real trainer. I saw a clip where some guy was like, so your dad a fighter? And he's like, nah. He's like, so what's your dad's background? He's like, I don't know. We both learned together. We learned on the job. You know, my dad, credit to his dad, because he did a phenomenal job getting him through the amateurs and into the pro ranks.
Ryan was a legit amateur. People forget that. Like, very big high time. Level. Very, very high level. A lot of amateur fights. Not easy to do. And even as athletically gifted as he is, amateurs, though, a lot of that athleticism and a lot of those gifts get kind of muted because of how short the fights are and because of how technical that is and how good guys get. No, he was a very good high-level amateur. So you always have to keep that in mind. I think people forget that because they're like, oh, this YouTuber. No. Ryan's not a YouTuber. Ryan is a legit boxer from a boxing background.
Yeah, I just don't know if I trust the dad, Henry Garcia, as a trainer in a big fight. Obviously goes to Goosen.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you're going comparing head to head in terms of trainers, and also like I said, because Ryan used to train with Joe, so there's that aspect to it as well. So Joe does have
cooperation.
Yeah, he's like, you don't train Ryan, you kind of cooperate or coordinate with Ryan or something like that, which is not a great thing to hear. That's why we're at where we're at, where you see him going back to his father and training in his living room.
We will break that fight down extensively. Tyson Fury is set to take the stage on Monday at a press conference for his fight with Makhmudov. So we get the whole full Tyson Fury experience this week, get the full Ryan Garcia experience this week. Oscar is suing his own fighters. Dana White's punching babies. Everything's going great.
You ever see the movie The Campaign with Will Ferrell when he punches the baby?
That's Oscar. I mean, that's Dana punching the crap out of babies.
He's on his way. He's trying to punch Eddie Hearn, misses and hits the baby. Oh no!
Has anyone made that yet? An AI slop?
They will as soon as this episode comes out.
Dana White punching Oscar and Eddie as babies. Like, I'll make it today.
Yeah, AI. AI. Thank you, Dan, for bringing out more AI slop and putting it out into the ether. Slop.
Slop.
We live. 2026 is the year of slop.
It's a lot of it out there. I'm getting better at distinguishing it, though.
Oh, you're not doing the boomer thing with, hey, Chris. Hey, it's my dad. Hey, Chris, you see this bear? See this bear on water skis? No, see dad.
Bear drinking a Coca-Cola?
Dad, it's AI. It's AI.
No, I'm getting better at
boomers. It's a boomer trap. It's sad and hilarious at the same time.
Damn right. All right, we'll be back on Thursday with a preview episode for the big fights this weekend. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. There are those DMs. See you next time.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.